Thank you very much for being here on this beautiful day. Let's work around the table and then around the room and do our introductions. Can we start with you, Laura?
Sure. I'm Laura Vernon. I'm the Sovereign Lands Planner with the Division of Forestry, Fire, and State Lands.
And I'm Jake Vanderlaan. I'm the Great Salt Lake Water Quality Coordinator at Division of Water Quality.
Randy Elliott, Davis County Commissioner.
Carrie Gibson, Weir County Commission.
Don Leonard with the Brownsville District.
Jeff Richards, Migratory Bird Questionaries.
Dan Tuttle, representing Tooele County.
Chris Montague, representing Dave Livermore, who's in Washington County today.
Karen Nichols with HDR.
Jeff Lukowski, Rio Tinto.
Marcel Sheep with the National Audubon Society.
Anna Ville with the Nature Conservancy.
Connolly Malden, Pacific Corp.
Todd Adams, Utah Water Resources.
Joshua Palmer, Water Resources.
Brian Dixon, Bear River Land Conservancy.
Jan Strickler with the Living Daughters.
Jeff Ray, the Utah Waterfowl Association.
Linda Freitas, Friends of Great Salt Lake.
Jeff Den Weicker, Jacobs.
Mary Rice, Salt Lake City, Farm Public Utilities.
Claudia Cottle with Fair Lake Watch.
Dave Cottle with Fair Lake Watch.
You want to introduce yourself?
sure. Will Summerhorn, Salt Lake County. I'm here for College of Christians.
Mix County, Howard Earth Council.
Nika Roundy, Davis County, and Great Salt Lake Bird Festival.
Jamie Barnes, Forestry, Fire, and State Lands.
Laura Alt, Forestry, Fire, and State Lands.
Carolyn Holmes, Western Resource Advocates.
Chris Napoli, Division of Water Resources.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you for being here. This is not our regular meeting day. We typically meet the second Wednesday, and when we laid out the calendar for the year, someone had suggested that we had a conflict last week for the Great Salt Lake Issues Forum, and so we adopted this day. We have several of our members who've asked to be excused. Leland Myers is out of state at a conference. Jeff Scott's at a commission meeting this morning. And
Todd, I think, had interest.
Yeah, Todd actually is in Washington, D.C. on a lobbying trip. So they asked to be excused. But we do, in fact, have a forum and appreciate being here. Hopefully with last week's issues forum and today, it's not overload on the Great Salt Lake. You received an agenda prior to the meeting by email, and I would entertain a motion to approve that agenda for the meeting. Thank you, Dan. Thank you, Jeff. Any debate or discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Any abstentions? It's unanimous. You also received the notes from the meeting of March 14, 2018 in advance, and I think they're attached to your agenda today as well, are they? No, they're not. We didn't do that because we sent them out. We received no corrections or additions to those notes, so I'd entertain a motion to approve them.
So moved.
Thank you.
Second.
Thank you very much. Any debate or discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Any abstentions? That's unanimous. Let's, before we move to our updates and reports agenda item, let's call on Nika Roundy to give us a brief report on the Bird Festival.
I bring this to your attention today because Great Salt Lake Bird Festival is in its 20th year. This is our 20th celebration of birds along Great Salt Lake. And thanks to all of you for your partnerships and support. I have today a flyer for you that has activities that will be at the Farmington location just across the freeway here on Friday afternoon and all day Saturday, and it goes into detail about the timing and of the workshop. And if you're interested in field trips, you can go online and look at some field trips too. So I'll just kind of pass these around if you don't mind, and you can come and share with us on Friday afternoon and Saturday, Great Salt Lake Bird Festival. Thank you.
Nika, congratulations on 20 years. That's a great...
Well, congratulations to you all for helping.
Davis family for putting this on. I participated a number of times. It's a great event, and they're just getting better all the time, I understand. So congratulations.
Mr. Williams?
Our next...
Could I just ask one thing?
Certainly. Go ahead, Marcel.
It's very auspicious that the 20th anniversary of the Great Salt Lake Bird Festival is also during May, which is now the month of the bird in Utah during this 2018 year. Congratulations.
Congratulations. It's so declared by the governor.
That's right.
Will May always be the month of the bird in Utah? Or just this year?
We attempted, but right now, there's always next year to ask.
Thank you. Okay, the next agenda item is updates and reports. As you know, we have a relationship with the Great Salt Lake Technical Team, which consists mostly of technical scientists, other people who are interested in the Great Salt Lake and participate in providing input to the management plan. They also, according to the statute that created the Great Salt Lake Advisory Council, serve as a technical advisor to our group. And some of you attend those meetings, but most do not. So a few months ago, we decided to initiate the process of having some brief summary reports of the technical reports that are given at those meetings, so we can have the benefit of that information. And we've asked Laura Vernon from the Division of Forestry, Fire, and State Lands to review one of the studies that has been followed by the technical team regarding the dust. And then we've asked Jake Vanderlaan from Division of Water Quality to review, and he's going to review USGS and USU monitoring results from the New Causeway breach. So Laura, do you want to go first?
Sure. All right, I was just going to summarize the work that Dr. Kevin Perry recently did on quantifying the impacts of Great Salt Lake dust plumes on local air quality. Dr. Perry did present this at the Great Salt Lake Issues Forum, so this is an even more condensed version of his presentation. He received the Tech Team grant in fiscal year 17 and also funding from the Department of Facilities Management, because as they were identifying the prison location on the shores of the Great Salt Lake, they wanted to understand how dust would impact, Great Salt Lake dust could potentially impact the residents of the prison and the employees. So Dr. Perry got to work in 2016. There were 550 square miles of exposed lake bed. The lake elevation at that time, more or less, with the closure of the breach, the average was about 4191. And just for a point of reference, today it's 4194.1. The goal of Dr. Perry's project was to document the soil surface crust conditions for the entire exposed lake bed. He wanted to identify specific dust source regions or hot spots where the majority of the dust was found blowing from, and then determine if PM10 dust from Great Salt Lake contains heavy metals at potentially harmful levels. So he's about halfway done, as far as I can tell. He sampled 48 subunits and has 2,000 soil samples. He biked 834 miles to get around the Great Salt Lake. He's only half done with his sample location.
And at half his weight.
What's that?
And at half his weight.
Yeah, right. He had two flat tires, he said. So pretty good for 834 miles. So some of his findings about the dust source hotspots were that they were located close to stream entrances, areas with sparse vegetation and heavily disturbed areas, so around ATV tracks, perhaps. And this was also one of the reasons Dr. Perry pointed out why he was traversing the lake bed by bike. He did a comparison of bike tread versus ATV tread on the lake bed. There is some out there, in case you guys don't know. ATV tracks. The dust hotspots were more prevalent in recently exposed areas, and in the end he found that hotspots could be identified by aerial photo. So the areas that he ground truth, you could see in the aerial photos. And of the heavy metals that he tested, which were arsenic, lithium, copper, vanadium, antimony, chromium, lead, selenium, and thallium, lithium was the only metal that ranked high on the EPA's residential regional screening level. And I don't know a lot about what that means, the RSL level. He was going to look into more why, what that was indicative of and why it was just lithium and what the potential impacts of that will be. So his future work will include further examination of the lithium monitoring, but also include sampling of the other 50% of the lake bed, conducting a health risk assessment for non-carcinogenic and carcinogenic PM10 doses. And he wanted to combine the digital elevation model to determine how lake level affects the number of hotspots. That could be interesting.
Any questions, Laura?
Don't know that I can answer them.
Any really hard questions for Laura?
No.
Right. Interesting study. I know that when we rank our water strategies for Great Salt Lake, our number 12 ranking priority was complete an analysis of the public health effects of the exposed sediments around Great Salt Lake and low levels. This is part of that outcome. I also know that we've learned from Owens Lake the cost of not addressing these issues early. Mm-hmm. They spent over $2 billion to address fugitive dust with a $75 million annual price tag to deal with that issue.
And it's a much smaller,
smaller
lake bed.
Right.
And Dr. Perry, I believe, is hoping to wrap this study up at the end of 2018. So if you guys are interested, we could have him come and give a full presentation when he's all done.
Laura, is lithium a health threat at certain concentrations?
Apparently it was close to exceeding whatever that healthy level is or the unhealthy level is, but I wish I could tell you more about it. He just had a graph of the highest level that they monitored and then the EPA RSL level, and they were right neck and neck with each other. So.
His research is funded by a pop-up grant?
The tech team grants, and then like I said, the DFCM provided some money when they were working on the prison relocation.
Do you know what the cost of the research is?
Gosh. I would say together with the DFCM money, maybe $100,000. I think our portion of it was maybe
$60,000. Dan, Jeff?
Thank you, Chair. Is that a natural occurrence? Do we have lithium out on the lake?
Well, U.S. Magnesium is starting to extract that, right?
I know.
Ponds, so.
I'm just saying that it's there because it's there.
Mm-hmm.
It's like arsenic.
Right, so yeah. Mm-hmm. As are many of the other metals. So.
Good point. Jeff.
What's the number you quoted on the on Owens Lake?
$2.1 billion so far and $75 million a year ongoing. For some LA area water users, it represents what?
30% of their water bill.
30% of their water bill. Thank you, Colin. Welcome, Colin.
Sorry.
That's all right. We saved
the
place.
I think Jeff behind you.
Jeff behind you.
Just a quick question.
Is this back on the side?
Is Dr. Perry also looking at mobilization rates or how, we know what the dust is, the hotspots.
Like
are,
how far it carries?
Well, what kind of wind events does it take to mobilize it? Or is that the next step?
I think that is kind of his next, or a discussion topic for next steps. I don't think he's looking at that. Dr. Carling has been looking at that, like how the dust is transported across the valley, but Dr. Perry isn't looking at that.
He is doing particle size, though, so that usually is an indicator of much.
And lake pan thickness, I think I saw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which a lot, he said most of it is easily mobilized, I guess is what, how he characterized that. But that's a good question.
And good questions. Other comments or questions?
His presentation is going to, everything has been videoed on the Issues Forum program, so that will be available online, and I'll let everyone know when that's posted.
Thank you, Laura. Appreciate putting you on the spot for research, for which you're not the author. Now let's put Jake on the spot. Jake?
Yeah, okay, so I was gonna talk about some USGS and University of Utah work that's been going on, monitoring both flows at the New Causeway breach, as well as the sort of reformation and composition of a deep brine layer in Gilbert Bay. And this was work, this is work that's been going on since the breach opened and a little bit before, and they presented this at the October 2017 tech team meeting. But since then, they've continued this monitoring and continued this work, and if you were at the issues forum, they presented there as well. So there's still these sort of interesting patterns going on. But like I mentioned, there's really two components. One is monitoring flow between the two bays at the breach, and the other is monitoring the deep brine layer. So at the flow measurements, they're taking two types of measurements. One is a discrete monthly average type measurement, and that's intended for the permit compliance monitoring. The other is a more experimental high frequency bidirectional flow measurement, and they're currently developing the means to convert velocities and depths into discharges back and forth between the two bays. The second component then is the deep brine layer monitoring and measuring both its presence and extent, but also its composition. And so they're doing monthly monitoring of conductivity, pH, dissolved oxygen, and water temperature profiles across a series of transects running from south to north through Gilbert Bay. And then they're also collecting surface and deep mercury and methylmercury concentrations. So they're collecting samples a half meter from the surface and a half meter from the bottom to capture both a surface and a deep, potential deep brine layer concentration. And what they're finding is one, that there can be temporary low dissolved oxygen conditions even without the deep brine layer, which is an interesting finding. And that seems to be at least potentially associated with a thermal stratification that happens when fresh water comes in through runoff. We've also started seeing a deep brine pool forming. That started occurring in spring of 2016, about June or July. And that deep brine layer is most prominent closest to the causeway opening, so further north. And as you move south through the lake, it becomes less and less apparent. And then kind of important here that those deep brines have been associated then with longer lasting conditions of anoxia at the deep brine or at the deep parts of the lake, and also associated with some elevated mercury and methylmercury concentrations like we had seen before the culverts were closed and before the breach was opened.
Thank you. Questions or comments? Welcome, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us today.
Sorry, I'm late. I had another meeting that last time.
That's all right. I know you live a busy life. Any other questions for Jake?
Is there any opinion of the benefits or disbenefits of what's happening? I mean, you mentioned a couple of mercury, methylmercury, or traditionally, in my book, not good things.
Right? Yeah, generally considered potentially toxic and problematic. I think it's a really good question. It's a question that came up at the Issues Forum. It's a question that's come up, I think, here before.
Okay.
It's not one that I think I can answer myself, but certainly I think with the new Salinity Advisory Committee, you know, you guys at this table, I think it's a valid question.
Other comments or questions? Thanks, Jay. Appreciate your doing that. It'll be interesting to see how that unfolds. Okay, let's go. It's the third item underneath updates and reports. I wanted to follow up on the appropriation for Great Salt Lake in the recent legislative session. As you know, in the session, the legislature, there's an existing brine shrimp royalty that is dedicated to the species protection account, the Endangered Species Mitigation Fund used to be called. And that account has developed a surplus, and so it's determined to allocate 0.5 cents of that royalty, which is $125,000, to the restricted fund, the Sovereign Lands Management Account, for the following purpose. For the Great Salt Lake, as directed by the Great Salt Lake Advisory Council. So there's a $125,000 ongoing appropriation in that fund, funded out of the brine shrimp royalty, so it doesn't divert any existing funds in that fund away from other forest fire and state land or other state activities. And it's up to us to recommend slash dictate how that money would be used. And so I wanted to give this brief introduction to that, because at our next meeting in July, we need to talk about how we want to recommend that that money be used. And initially, when we secured that funding, back in my mind was, well, there's so many research needs, maybe we can use it to help leverage some research and other projects, like our health project that we did a number of years ago and our economic report project. But since then, it's also been suggested that perhaps there's some staffing needs or other things that it could be used for. As you could tell from what I read out of the legislation, the description of how we can dictate its use is fairly broad, has to be related to the Great Salt Lake. And so between now and July, if you think about that, think about it in terms of this year in particular, but you can take a longer term view as well. And then between now and then, I'd like to have a brief visit with each of you and get some ideas of what you're thinking, and hopefully come back in July with some kind of recommendation as to how that first $125,000 might be spent. And then we don't necessarily need to decide in July, but we can if we would like. We have through the end of the fiscal year to determine how to use that funding. Any questions or comments about that? Let me just mention that I appreciated the strong support of Division of Natural, or Department of Natural Resources Director Mike Styler in securing that funding, and those who work with him were very, very helpful, and he was strongly supportive of it. So we'll talk soon. Let's go to the next agenda item. Discussion on application to store and appropriate Bear Lake and Bear River water. So I got a bit of a firestorm of emails, actually, because there was a technical team meeting that was canceled due to some conflicts, and it was anticipated that perhaps this subject would be on that agenda. And so a number of people emailed me and suggested that we add it to our, that we include it on our agenda. And of course, what we're talking about is a water right application filed jointly by the states of Utah and Idaho to store and appropriate up to 400,000 acre feet of water from Bear Lake and Bear River. And I know that the Division of Water Resources has been having a number of individual meetings with groups and individuals who are interested in this topic, but it hasn't lessened the interest in having it on our agenda. So we invited Todd Adams, who's the Deputy Director of Water Resources, and he's agreed to come and face us down on this and have a good conversation. So Todd, take it away, it's all yours.
Well, thanks for inviting me. I'd like to use the whiteboard. I don't know which one's the easiest to use, so.
Up to you.
Wherever we're gonna displace the least amount of people, maybe over here.
Okay,
sorry. So first off, thanks for inviting me. We are meeting with a whole bunch of stakeholders. We've met with a bunch, and we have some scheduled for next week. I asked Josh Palmer to come with me and to take a few notes, because if you have questions and concerns, we want to make sure we get those down so we can attempt to address most of them. So, with that said, I'd like to describe what the 400,000 acre feet of application is. And with that said, I know that there are some of you in the room that are going to go, yeah, right. I know we didn't make very good friends with Pacific Corp. I think we're talking now once again, which is good. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, Conley. At least we're talking. We're listening. So, for those of you who don't know the operation of Bear Lake.
Before you move on, Todd, yeah. You can't really see the board. There are a couple of seats over here. Feel free to move over.
We've seen it a couple times.
Just a few times. You want to help him give it?
I should probably draw the diagram.
All right.
Throw something.
I'm out of here.
Throw something new in there, Todd, just for that.
Okay. So this is Bear Lake, and again, I'm going to draw these things, and nothing's to scale, okay? The top of Bear Lake that you can currently store is 5923.65. The bottom of the storage component for practical purposes is 5902. The pumps through the settlement agreement is down to 5904, and Pacific Corp tries to operate around 5918 plus or minus a couple of feet. So you wonder where we get the 400,000 acre foot potential storage from? That's right here. That's the top 5.65 feet of Bear Lake. Every foot on Bear Lake stores approximately 70,000 acre feet of water. What we're talking about here is, can we operate Bear Lake at a higher elevation, maybe make it more stable, and then pull that water for uses along the river. When Idaho came to us in late February, they said, we're gonna file this application in Idaho. We thought we'd let you know, and do you wanna be involved or not? Well, with a deal like that, we figured we'd be better to be at the table than not at the table, and let them have control of all of that. A day or so later, we said, we probably ought to file in Utah too jointly, because you've got a lake that straddles the line. Bear River flows up and around, again, not to scale. Got the Great Salt Lake down here. Got Alexander, you've got Oneida, Cutler, a few things. So we gave a presentation and we were talking about the water on top of Bear Lake. And the individual took 5 minutes to figure out we were not trying just to store in Idaho. Got a little more to the north on the map. So, currently, again, we're meeting with stakeholders. We're meeting with Idaho Board of Water Resources, the state of Wyoming. There is a Bear River Compact, as well as Pacific Corp. What we intend to do in the next year or so is model the entire river system to play what-if scenarios. We understand, the more I meet with all the stakeholders, it's volume, its location, and its timing of these flows for pretty much anyone. We want to extend our Bear River system model to include the entire Bear River. Now, what we think makes this work is there's a stretch of river up here in Idaho in what's called the Gentile Valley, where the flows that are restricted in that area to about 1,500 second feet. If we get a flood easement in that area, we can go up to in the neighborhood of 2,600 to 2,800 second feet, which may allow you to operate in this different zone a little bit higher. Now, with that said, if we can operate Bear Lake just 2 feet higher, that's 140,000 acre feet. Maybe we can deliver another 50, 70, 100,000 acre feet to watered interests in the Bear River. Now, I see Conley smiling. We'll let the state engineer determine that, all those kind of things. It's just an application. The state engineers in both Idaho and Utah, we've asked not to act upon this until we can answer a lot more questions and we can go forward. So that's what we're trying to do.
So you want to increase the flow through the Gentile Valley then? Is that the scope would run there? I have interest there.
Right. So. And that's right. Well, that's one. And that's where my family's all from. So they're looking at flood easements in that area. And that also helps Pacific Corp with some spinning reserves.
Okay.
And those are very valuable opportunities for Pacific Corp to be able to ramp up when some of these other hydropower, coal, wind, solar is not happening, that they can ramp up and create some spot power. Great question, but yeah, Gentile Valley is a great place. There's about 17 landowners in the from about Cottonwood up to the Grace.
Yeah.
I don't know what else. Josh, is there something else I've missed? Some of you that have been in these presentations before, Jeff. Anything else?
Yeah, it was a long one.
Okay.
But yeah,
okay.
Give us some what ifs. If you go forward, what kind of a time frame, what kind of process, and what might be done in the future operationally, and how you work,
well,
secure and fill that extra space, and what you'd use the water for, and when and how. And well, all that has to be decided.
Sure, all of that has to be decided. We're still trying to run this model to play these what if scenarios. The application encompasses a lot of things. The Division of Water Rights put it in for industrial or municipal and irrigation. If you look at the underlying application, we tried to cover aesthetic flows, environmental, recreation, so forth and so on, so we can encompass everything. So it's our intention. We're trying to get a meeting now together with the three states and Pacific Corps. to get this modeling process started, to extend our model. Our current model that the division operates is essentially from Oneida down. I know Pacific Corp has a model operation. I don't know that it goes too much further than the other, just Bear Lake and up here. We're going to try to tie all those together, including above the lake. The Bear River Compact also has a couple other elevations that are interesting to note, as well as the Bear Lake Settlement Agreement. Between 5914.7 and 5904, the allocation goes from zero to a full allocation of 245K acre feet on an annual basis. So if the elevation's right here, it's ramped down to 200, 180, whatever it is on that elevation. The other elevation that's interesting to note is 5911, and that is, if the elevation is below that, the upper water users in Wyoming and Idaho can only store the pre-compact negotiated storage elevations and capacities. So they have an interest in having a lake that's higher.
So your model, I'm assuming, will look at impacts to Bear Lake. Will it include Great Salt Lake?
Yeah, we'll have that. So we'll have it put it down to here. This total storage potential is 1.4 million acre feet. And from there below to the 200 feet or so deeper, it's about 5 million acre feet. It's a big reservoir. We've had interest up at Bear Lake that say we don't want our lake fluctuating anymore. We'd like a nice constant level. I understand that. We have water users that say we want it all. We have Great Salt Lake interests that say we'd like more than all of it. So we're just trying to balance and make a win-win-win-win-win situation. Can we make that happen? I don't know, but we're going to try. Yeah.
Tom and then Chris.
Thank you. Todd, I know there's been at least one comparison to like the Colorado River, where everyone gets their allotment, you've dried it up more than enough. And I know in general in Utah, we've got more paper water rights than we have wet water. Where does this sit relative to that? As we allocate wet water, there's going to be within the overall basin, the Weber River Basin, it's not just the Great Salt Lake, but other water rights come up short. Does your department, does the state have a strategy, or at some point we're allocating tomorrow's water that may not be there, and so we're deciding now who's not going to have water tomorrow?
In 2009 and 10, the Bear Commission and the Compact went through a depletion update, looking at the depletions, at least on the Bear River. And for the most part, in the upper and the central and the lower, for the most part, pretty much everybody in the upper Bear and the central Bear are, well, central is about at their compacted allocation. The upper has about 5,000 or so acre feet. And down below, they show not much use has happened and still have an allotment in them. Through the compact of 270, 125 to Idaho, first right, 275 to Utah, second right. And we're nowhere close to those values.
And right now the use is determined, at least for Utah share, or in Utah statute, and that's part of the debate over in-stream and those sorts of things.
Right.
Okay.
Thanks. Just kind of a basic and stupid question is why now, and what would be happening without this rush to get the new permits, and what is this a normal way of securing water for public purposes for, what is, Idaho seems to be the trigger to make something happen, but I'm just wondering what would be, why the rush and what would be different if you weren't trying to get water permits at this time where they go.
Maybe let me give you a little bit more history. About a year ago, just a little bit more than a year ago, Pacific Corp brought a similar idea to the Bear River Commission and the Bear River water users and the Utah water users. Let's just say that the Bear River water users and Utah water users weren't overly enamored with that potential project at that time. And I think this was their way of saying, we want a seat at the table, we want to talk, and we decided to join forces and do this. We know that there's still lots of decisions that need to be made, lots of questions to be answered. Our state engineers are going to have to go through all of this water and water rights on and look at that. That's a ways away, so we're just in the process.
Did that answer all your questions you had three or four?
I think that's okay.
Dan?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The whole problem that I see in this is the amount of water not coming to the Great Salt Lake. It isn't just 400,000 acres, it's 220,000 acres because of your Bear River project. And you take that much water away besides everybody wanting to use their affluent water for secondary water use. You've got storm water, and that would be it, just about. So there's no advantage for anybody that is around the Great Salt Lake to do anything because there won't be any water coming in. All the canals have really been low this spring until this last storm, and then they're full. But with Utah Lake wanting to make theirs deeper and put an island, I think they're going to cut back on their water too. So is it really your plan just to dry up the Great Salt Lake?
Absolutely not. And we believe that the Bear River Development Act, the 220,000 acre feet that you talk about, will be a diversion, not a depletion. We believe the depletion to the lake will be much lower than that. But we want to plan, we're going to plan and model it and see the impact of the inflows to the lake.
If I may, Mr. Chairman.
Sure.
They also ran a bill which would stop the lake level from rising in the legislature. That didn't work either.
No, it didn't.
So.
And I've also heard some folks want to put an elevation that'll never get below either, and I don't know how well that'll work. Depends on what Mother Nature does. We need a couple of 2017 years on top of one another. Maybe not quite to the 83s component. But.
So what are you doing about that, getting a couple of 2017?
But it's all.
All right, any other questions?
Hey, Todd, the model you guys are gonna be working on, I'm assuming, you know, that'll be based on a lot of the data like that Craig Miller has with you guys, as far as the Great Salt Lake model. Will that all be, the data for that be publicly available as well? Because I asked Craig for his data to support his claim that Bear River development would just lower the lake 6 inches, and he sent me a few PowerPoint slides, and I'd just like to see the whole data set when the model is available.
Right, and the answer is, we haven't started it, but I think the answer is yes, we're gonna provide all the information that we can. I do know that through the model that was built through Jeff and Forestry, Fire, and State Lands, we're still working on getting that information out there to provide it. I do know that Craig's model is extremely complicated, and you know, I don't even know quite, sometimes I understand it's PowerPoint, so you're one up on it. So. But that's the intention, and if we need to get you more stuff, come visit, we'll talk, so.
Well, what's the time frame and opportunity for comment or input? I know you're taking informal input always, but in terms of the process, at what point in time will there be like a comment deadline or a protest deadline or whatever?
But when the state engineer formally opens up his process, there will be opportunity for the public comment at that time. But in the meantime, we're meeting with all stakeholders, and if you didn't get your questions answered, come on back and meet with you again, and we'll, if you thought of something else, please come see us. We want to know. We want to try to make this work. Again, we're going to try to make it a win-win-win. But the more complex it is, the more I wonder if we'll make that work. So I don't know. But the state engineer has a formal process, and that hasn't even started yet. So you got a question behind you.
Lynn.
I have a question and a comment.
Sure.
First is the question. The 2 foot higher increment off to the left, Did you say that was, if I'm understanding this correctly, 140,000 acre feet?
For every foot on Bear Lake, it's approximately 70,000 acre feet of water stored.
Okay. And is the 140,000 a part of the 200 or the 400,000 that we're talking about right now?
The 400,000 is the potential in the bathtub to store the water above this 5918.
Okay.
So that's how much water you can store in 5.65 feet of elevation.
Okay.
But if we could operate it this much higher, 2 feet higher, whatever, that equates to about 140,000, give or take. And again, we're going to model all these things and try to determine where we can make it work.
Okay. I don't know, 3 weeks ago, I lost track of time when the commission met in the DNR building and the conversation about reviewing the 20-year review, talking about those comments. And when Great Salt Lake came up in the conversation, I thought it was really profound. I won't get the gentleman's name correct, but maybe it was Stackman?
Gary Stackman?
What is? Is he a, on the...
He is the commissioner for Idaho, and he is also the Idaho State Engineer.
Okay. And it was, the consensus among the commission was, that I picked up was, well, you know, it's really, Great Salt Lake isn't really the compact's, the commission's responsibility. It clearly falls in the state of Utah, because clearly you have some expression that has emerged that the people of Utah, the Great Salt Lake interests, have continued to express this need to accommodate or recognize the lake. And I did think that was quite profound, that the, to some extent, the onus is really on your shoulders.
And
how did you feel about that?
That's a great comment, and I will tell you, prior to those meetings when we met with Idaho, I got the feeling sometimes that they didn't know anything past the Utah or Idaho-Utah state line and really didn't care. But once we've had more discussions with them, they understand how important it is to us. And they're starting to understand, and they've actually ratcheted up in their importance. So it's been good to have the dialogue with Idaho so they understand that.
So I guess here's my second question, and I didn't suggest I was going to have one, but in your thinking,
I'll have an answer either.
In your thinking and in your stakeholder meetings that you're having, will you seriously consider incorporating Great Salt Lake in the dynamic of this water picture that we're talking about, in that there is this important economic and ecological.
I think that's what I've said.
Okay.
I mean, we're trying to help everything, other than I know that everybody wants all of it.
Yeah.
So we've got to try to find a balance, too.
Thanks.
You bet.
Hey, Jeff.
Thank you.
Todd, when you say everybody wants all of it, if the state of Idaho and the state of Utah had about 400 acre feet, would the state then act as kind of like the bureau in allocating that water? How would that work?
Haven't worked that out yet, Jeff. We're still in negotiations. I mean, how do you break out the 400,000 acre feet? We decide that later. You know, do you base it on land area? Do you base it on compact allocation? Use, all those things we said, no, we'll talk about that later. So that has not been determined yet.
It seems like, from my perspective, and I can give you kind of the context of Pacific Corp, we looked at spinning reserves. We have to have energy that's available at all times. So if you have a wind project or solar, we need something to offset that. If the wind stops blowing, we have to instantaneously match that load on our entire system. So it was a good opportunity for us to go out and get those easements. You talked about a Gentile Valley, so that was just a release of the water. Had nothing really to do with storage in Bear Lake at all. Given that, though, if you do have those easements and you can flood, then what that did is gave Pacific Corp the opportunity to store higher. Because if the 18 to 23.65, the only reason, so we've got the exclusive right to store in Bear Lake as a company. We manage it down to 5918 solely to prevent flooding. We've had litigation for decades about flooding. So we use that as kind of a margin or a buffer, and we manage it up or down depending on what the water year is at that 5918. So that's kind of what that incremental difference is there. But as we looked at, if we could flood in the Gentile Valley, we could hold it higher, and that would change that flooding regime a little bit, so we could actually hold the lake higher. Then I think the state said, hey, that's a great idea. We're going to do that, and we're going to take that right from Pacific Corp, condemn the facilities, the pumping facilities, use of the canals, and basically that top 5 feet of water. And so we're going to do it, and now we're going to make it that water available for M&I and other uses. But what I'm not totally clear on is that the M&I use and the ag use has actually been identified as a need, unless that foregoes the Bear River development.
We've been talking with the water users in both states. We think this is mostly going to try to supplement the existing irrigation uses. Period. That's what we think. But we just made sure we had a broad umbrella to cover everything. This change in operation for, I think that's what I heard you say also, but a change in operation really allows you to potentially yield more through having the flood easements and some other things.
Yeah.
And if it's been said it's about condemning, I don't believe that's what we're intending to do. We're planning on working with you.
Yeah. So I think there's an awful lot more to consider. And I think Lynn's question was a good one, because when you look at all of this, if you're looking at a win-win, if you're taking more water out of the system and you're holding Bear Lake higher, more often, there's a net water loss to the Great Salt Lake. I mean, there's just no other way.
Sure, whether it's this project or my kids or your kids or grandkids coming in here, there's going to be a net effect on the Greater Salt Lake component by the amount of water that's being used. I agree.
Yep, I think that's right. And in my view, I guess as a member of this board here, as I sit here today, is I think the only way really to make this work, regardless of who holds that 5 feet, is there's got to be some mitigation component where, there's got to be a creative solution here where there's where the Great Salt Lake is not harmed. There's no net decrease, but it still allows some additional water usage, perhaps. And I think they are, to Todd's credit, with all the modeling that you're doing and future water needs, and I think there is a some desire in Southeast Idaho to make changes in uses of water that may benefit the Great Salt Lake and for development. And I think there's a lot of opportunities, and I think this modeling is a great part of that to figure out how to make that work and whether or not it will work or what the impacts are in the Great Salt Lake. So lots to come out of your modeling.
Well, lots of questions to be answered. Thanks, Jeff. There's another one.
Dan, and then...
Oh, okay.
And Jeff, Chairman. The use of this, is this going to be used mostly in low, good weather years, or is this going to be used when we have a lot of good weather and rain?
That's why we're going to model it, we're going to look at it. Well, I think the prime example that I have is just last year, when we had 2017, we had the lake go up 12 feet, almost 12 feet, set up a total new record for Bear Lake since 1917. This particular year started out really dry. We know that the water users were interested in potentially getting some of their water early, or at least a slug of water early, so they could break down, get the crop in. So, this might be a year when we could say, yeah, maybe this is the type of year, a dry year after a wet year, where they could get a little more water on the ground quicker. Okay. But we'll model it.
Yeah, maybe I misunderstood your prior comment, but did you say that the state is thinking of doing Bear River development in addition to this? In other words, it would create yet another impoundment in addition to storing?
Yeah, in the high flows.
Pardon?
Yes.
So you'd be taking not just the 200,000 acre feet that you want to store in Bear Lake, but then an additional 200 and whatever thousand acre feet that you want to put in an impoundment somewhere downstream?
As the legislation directs the division to look at those things, that's what we're looking at.
And where does that water right come from?
It, comes from the state engineer.
Well, if you're taking the 200,000 that you have under the compact at Bear Lake and storing that at Bear Lake, then where do you get the water to put it down?
We currently have some holdings that the Bureau of Reclamation had that were transferred to the division and board that would provide the water for that. And they're high flows in the wintertime.
So, yeah, I guess I'm a little bit mystified then why you need to have another. If the state has taken the position that it needs the Bear River development for 200,000 acre feet plus, then why do you need another 200,000 acre feet of Bear Lake?
Right there. From Cache Valley, the Bear River doubles in size in the flows, and there's no storage on, for the most part, on any of Cache Valley. So a lot of that water supply comes in below Bear Lake. That's
fine. A year or so ago, Pacifico was also talking about raising cover several feet. Have you had any discussion with Pacifico about that project and how this would impact that?
We have not had any discussions about raising cover. I know I'd like to let Jeff or Conley answer that, but we have not had any discussions about that.
Yeah. No, it's still a conceptual idea that we're considering. We'll recommend evaluate a decision right now, and we'll know before we file our notice of intent for relicensing.
But it may be, I mean, we've had that discussion, it may be another tool that may kind of interlink and find, you know, another solution here. We're early in the process, we're hopefully having more open dialogue.
Dan and then Tom and then Marcel. Thank you.
Where's this?
Tell me when we wear you out. Okay. Tell me when we wear you out. And
well, we get
you know, I just live right over there. I can walk home. My wife works for Davis County HR. I'll go cry on her desk and then I'll.
Go ahead, man.
You'll be home early.
I will.
So is this Gary Spackman? Is he in Boise?
Yes.
And he's the water engineer.
He's the Idaho State water right. He's the equivalent of Kent Jones in Utah. Mm-hmm.
Which I point out, it's a little odd because they filed the application. He's the one that's got to rule on the application.
Well, kind of it is, but it's the Board of Water Resources that filed in Idaho, not the division or the department. So it's a little bit different than Utah, where we have the Division of Water Resources and Division of Water Rights. So they are separate in Utah, and they've tried to separate that in Idaho by having the Idaho board, but
it's possible.
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay, we were at Tom and then Marcel.
Thank you. Todd, as you know, there's quite a bit of conversation about water rights at the legislative level this session, and I was asked in a meeting what this group, if there's any water rights legislation or something like that, is coming from this group to the legislature and the subtasks they're working on that. As you've said, your department's charge is to administer the waters of the state as the state directs you to do that. What would you say for understanding our interests of keeping water in the lake, what should we be suggesting?
Well, let me qualify that a little bit. We just have the direction from the legislature to look at the Bear River Development Act and the Lake Powell Pipeline Act.
Right.
The state engineer will take care of those other water right issues. So that is a separation of the question.
But right now, the statute under 73381B says, among other things, look at the impact of the environment, but it doesn't say that the environment is a beneficial use.
Right.
Right?
That's something.
And so as you look for developing water, you're looking for a beneficial use.
Right.
There's legislation proposed to have in-stream flow as a beneficial use.
Right.
If you were our consultant, what would you advise us to be interacting with? Well, because ultimately, right. You understand our goal.
No, I get it.
Yeah.
That's a really good question, a really tough question, and I might say I'm probably not going to answer it because I don't know. But if you do look at the underlying application, we try to include all of those aesthetic, recreational,
yeah,
and environmental component in it, understanding that at a point in time, maybe those will be recognized.
Okay.
But I that's a tough one.
The legislature can't figure it out, can't you?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Thank you.
Rather than just a...
Marcel and then Chris.
Sorry.
Go ahead, Marcel.
It's okay, I can...
Go ahead, Chris.
The state has an obligation to manage the Great Salt Lake in a sustainable fashion, which obviously has water to do with it. So rather than have the environmental just be another component in the variable in the plan, it seems to me the lake is a whole different animal. And if you're going to model it just in the streams and the upstream dams from the lake, but stop at the lake and pretend it doesn't factor in to being managed sustainably by the state. It just seems like there needs to be a lot more conversation about the role of the lake in this model and also in the picture in what the state's obligations are to maintain the lake.
I will say I totally agree. And I know there has been a model developed for the lake, essentially with PLOS, and I think we were trying to find, all of us were trying to find more money to take that model and do more things with it, with quantity and quality and everything else. And I know that's a second or third phase, and we'll see if we can get the appropriations to do that. We're going to start modeling this. We're not going to do away with what we already know and what we already have. We're going to try to incorporate that in. Make it better, more robust. And as I say that, I don't know how we're going to do it, but we're going to try.
Yeah, I'm just partially responding to Tom's comment and your statement that there's a pretty hard line about what is a beneficial use and what isn't a beneficial use. And I think there's maybe a little gray area for the lake because there is a beneficial use that you should maintain that system.
Sure. I think I'm trying to tell you, we're going to try to make win-win all the way around. I just don't know what that looks like right now.
Marcel?
I know this is early days, and I'll try to articulate my question, but the application covered all sorts of uses, as you just alluded to, including not only irrigation, but M&I. And it also included places of use that went beyond sort of the northern counties, but included Davis, Salt Lake County. And so I guess I'm wondering, is there a thought that some of that water would be diverted out of other water rights areas and that will that be taken into account in the model?
You mean exchange for water in the Provo or the Weavers?
Well, I don't know. I mean, if the place of use listed in the application included
We just made sure we covered the bases. And as I look back through it, we probably left out Ridge County. But that's where Bear Lake's at. So
will the model address those different alternatives?
We got to get the Bear model first before we got the Weaver and the Provo and everything else.
I think what I'm understanding, yeah. Todd. Okay. Sorry, I was just clarifying here. I think what I'm understanding is that within the application, it listed Davis and Salt Lake counties as you know, potential right. uses.
Right.
And so if it's listed that, I think what she's talking about is in the model, would those potential uses be reflected in the model? Is that
yes.
Is that right, Marcel?
The answer is yes. I believe we'd try to model that if we can. But if we left Weaver, Davis, and Salt Lake County out, that's where the bulk of the Great Salt Lake is. So how would you have been able to account for the Great Salt Lake if we hadn't included that also?
Again.
So I'm just asking. Yeah. Let's go here and
here. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So a beneficial use, would that include the $1.3 billion that the industry puts into the state coffers a year? I'm looking for some kind of thing because you haven't mentioned industry once.
And you know, Division of Water Rights does not recognize monetary component is a beneficial use of water right for the most part. It's how they put the water to use. They do recognize water right flows that all of you have in time.
Yeah, Todd, I know it's the division's position that the legislature passed Bear River Development Act, and that's why you're pushing forward on the project.
regardless of the fact that there's still been no documented need for the water. You mentioned earlier that this additional storage would be primarily used for irrigation. Is there any documented need for that water as well?
That's why we're going to develop a model to look at that and see what's outside of the natural flow as well as the supplemental.
Lynn, you have to tap me if you might think so.
When we worked on creating state water strategy, and one of the key policy questions was how to modernize the existing water law and include more stakeholder input. And among those factors included the public welfare, which is already existing as part of the law. And I'm just wondering, you know, in your responsibility and the way we've talked about the lake, to the extent that you can be an advocate without being uncomfortable about it, in, again, helping the state engineer begin to exercise this public welfare component that's right there already, and translate that into, okay, so dollars and cents don't matter, which is a big surprise. But officially, I would think, and the brine shrimp industry, in that livelihood, is certainly a part of a value that is public welfare, I would think. So just saying, Todd.
Thank you. Josh, you got that down?
Okay. I have a lot of typers, so if you could probably hear me getting it down.
Jeff? So just, I guess, one comment. I see this, the states having filed these water rights has created, I think, a lot of saber rattling, a lot of questions, a lot of angst among a lot of stakeholders. But I also see this as being kind of a good thing, because I think this is a dialogue that needed to happen probably even before now, and I think this has caused that to happen. And I think if there was ever any time to create a win-win and be creative about future uses of water and balancing the needs of the Great Salt Lake with the future of water development, I think it's now. And I see Todd as being very critical in all of this, because you're going to have to get really creative about this. I mean, timing of water uses and evaporation and all kinds of things that I think could come into play in that modeling and how you look at this. But I think if there was ever a time that we could get creative about this and create a win-win solution for a bunch of,
different interests. Yeah. This might be it.
I think this has to be it, because we're headed for a cliff.
Sure.
Because looking at the trajectory of the elevation of the Great Salt Lake, I mean, we're headed for a public trust doctrine litigation that may have, very Machiavellian impacts on water uses and everything else that everybody's going to be unhappy with. I think, really, this is our shot. To do it and to do it right.
I agree.
Thanks, Jeff. Other comments? Great, Todd. Hey, thank you for being here.
You betcha. Thank you for your questions.
Any and all questions?
And I'll leave some cards if you want to get a hold of me or come see me after. I'll stay for the rest of your room.
Appreciate it very much. Okay. I don't see an action step for the advisory council right now, but we need to have a follow-up conversation, I think, before too long, keying off Jeff's comments in particular. So.
On that note, Don, I guess you're mentioning, I think there will need to be some discussion of what is the role and the action that this group, as we, I welcome, like Todd said, it's an opportunity by studying it, and Jeff mentioned we're at that point, so not time now, but to really be on top of this so that we as a body and individually are providing meaningful input into the process, whether that's into the resources process of evaluation, whether that's legislatively to allow the beneficial uses or through the state engineer's review of the water right itself. We'll need to be stepping up with some action.
Got a sense for timing and what triggers that, Tom?
Well, I'm pretty familiar with water rights, and as Todd mentioned, that's out there. Some water rights sit in this applied but not advertised mode. So that's where we're at now. I know some that have sat 60 years in that status. But this one I think will get teed up and probably within a matter of months. And it would be important for this group or individuals who want to interact and share in that process. The state engineer by statute has an administrative process that requires someone to be responding within the time frame set by that process. So if you don't have an engineer or attorney that understands the water rights process, before that starts would be the time to do that, because that's how that water rights handled. I want to applaud Todd for, you know, as the applicant speaking for the state in terms of the resources itself, he's doing his job in a way that invites us in. But determining water rights is the state engineer, and that's a separate independent process. If it goes to the courts and an entity does not have standing, I'm not aware of anyone that has ever been able to assert standing after they've missed their opportunity during the administrative process. So I agree with Jeff. It's a welcome opportunity, a challenge, and thanks for the uncomfortableness, Todd, of standing in front of us and taking all those questions. But this will be big.
Okay, well, individual groups and interests need to get their arms around their take on this, and then we can have a conversation about whether there's something we can do as a group or should do as a group.
Yeah. I also will emphasize, I think, Jeff, I'm seconding that our participation with water resources, water rights, DEQ, with those that we might choose to be either friends or enemies, that we choose to be friends and work at the table, I think we're all going to end up with a better win-win scenario than if we have to go nuclear on each other. And that I see the trend is heading in a positive way, but there's always that temptation to get frustrated. So if we can not overlook the opportunities presented with the departments we're working with and the entities around the table that can find solutions. The fact that we have one of the premier water attorneys engaging with us, Mr. Clyde, the farm community is actually engaged on at a certain level on preserving the Great Salt Lake. They understand that. So we need to double down on that opportunity and make things happen.
Well, I, for one, do not intend to meet with you again, Tom, unless you destroy your nuclear arsenal. So.
Okay.
don't rattle anything.
You're baiting me, Don, but I'll keep my mouth shut.
Yeah.
So maybe to rip off what Tom just said, is there value? Our statutory duty is to provide guidance and recommendations to both of the DNR director and the is there value in at least putting together a position statement from this body about kind of our initial views with respect to this issue?
It's a pleasure.
If I can, first I'll say thank you to Lynn and her compadres for the wonderful forum. I use that as an opportunity to kind of bump in a few people and kind of ask some of these sorts of questions as I've been asked on the water rights side. And part of my offer will be maybe out of ignorance of maybe what has already been developed, but we have this wonderful study that says $1.3 billion of economic benefit to the Great Salt Lake. We have another study on the hydrology, but I don't, it may be out there within our community, but I don't think there's a document that is being cited at the legislative level, the news level of what are the consequences of the Great Salt Lake drying up. And maybe to Jeff's point, we're at the German word is Treffpunkt, a meeting place where big decisions are made and either we're going left or right. And Todd's division is going to be providing information. We have a lot of things lining up. What I don't see is communicating what are the impacts of a dry Great Salt Lake to both economically, to jobs, to recreation, to air quality. And if that's not out there, or if it is in a technical form, it needs to be in a form that's digestible with our legislative body, with our general public. So as Todd and the state engineer go through their process, they're not sticking their neck out there and trying to convince people it means something. They already have that information. So I don't, right now what we could say these are important and maybe we need a study to tell you that, and that's one piece of that. And I think distilling that's one idea that came out of my roundtable discussions.
Now, there is a concept paper being prepared in that regard by Audubon, by Marcel, and it's in a final stage. I think will be before us in July. So we can address that part of it in July.
And then the second, so it was just two. I said, there's like two or three things we can distill it down to. And the people that gave these are my ideas, they came from people in this room, is a policy statement saying that the state needs to decide as a matter of policy from the top to the bottom that either setting a level of the Great Salt Lake or more flow of the Great Salt Lake, not right now the path is, as we develop water rights for other uses, it's not if, it's when will the lake dry up. And without a policy statement from our governing bodies, you know, to our elected officials, that they understand the value of that and say, yeah, we don't want to dry Great Salt Lake. That's a matter of policy. Now, you departments that are in charge of figuring it out, from state engineer to water resources to water quality, environmental quality, air quality, that's the policy. I think those, at least from the handful of people that, I think those were good ideas. They seem to answer my question of having tools that we can take to the governor and the legislature.
Okay, so you have one suggestion on the table. Yours was a different suggestion, I think.
Well, I was trying to line it up with Jeff's, and I need lots of things on the list. A policy statement for this body saying that along the lines that a dry Great Salt Lake is dire to public health and welfare, from agriculture to industry to M&I, and so we need to set a level or a certain amount of water going to the lake. Those are being discussed at the legislative level, and in-stream flows is one of those, but even that one doesn't create water in Great Salt Lake. The state engineer is going to take applications and he's going to take the rules that he's guided by and say, well, that's one of many, as opposed to saying that's a fundamental goal. That's an avoidance to the a public trust doctrine lawsuit or something like that. That's doing it on the front side, but it's getting trust and buy-in, saying that's public policy. The second part that I think is a sister bit of information needs to get outside this room. Everyone around this table understands we're more than up a creek without a paddle if the Great Salt Lake dries up, whether you care about birds, you care about farms, or just public health. But I don't think that's not in the tenor or understanding of our legislature, of our governor. And they'll step forward if they understand that, but they don't. So those are two sister pieces of information that need to come out of this body.
Comments from other members of the advisory council about these suggestions? Commissioner.
I'm somewhat fearful to enter into this conversation, but we recognize that there's annual cycles, periodically, whether they're 27 years or 12 or 7, they come and they go. Is it prudent for us to take our valuable resources of time and money to speculate on what will happen 200 years from now? Or maybe not at all, depending on the weather cycles. And so realistically, we can guess, we can speculate, we can put a lot of effort into that, and what is the benefit over that extended period of time? Mm-hmm. So that's where I'm coming. I hope you'll understand that this is my thought, my comment. It's not personal, it's just, how do we deal with that?
Can I respond to that? That's a welcome question. It helps me understand one of the statements is, us saying that it's a dire impact is not the same as having a report that has actually set out the costs and benefits. Like, to your community that elected you, and you feel, Is it just about brine shrimp? Well, it's also about air quality and those sorts of things.
But it's also about salt. It's about magnesium.
Right.
Possibly titanium, you know, and so all of these things need to be considered when we're looking at the lakes and lake level. I'm a biologist by training. Mm-hmm. So as such, I've had to teach these cycles, the diurnal cycles, these cycles of weather and those kinds of things all of my working career. And understanding that is that this is not engineering. When engineering works, you put block A on block B and you get C. When you're in a biological system, there's a tremendous variation. And that's biology. I'm sorry, that's just the way it works. It's totally less predictable, I would say, than engineering, because you never know exactly what's going to happen. You can reduce some of the elements down, but you never really know. And so how much effort do we really want to put into this?
Other comments?
I was a biology major. That was my undergrad work, and my goal was to teach high school biology, which I never ended up doing. I was a school librarian. But your point is a good one. And I think the collective wisdom that's being expressed here is that it's better to be proactive in expressing these are concerns that we have with policy and with possibilities, so that it is a part of something that is more meaningful, just like we have a policy when we're going to turn on the pumps when the lake gets higher. I think we should have something similar to our understanding of the depletion of the lake in terms of possible future prospects.
Other comments? Let me take a stab at a suggestion here. Let's ponder what we've said. Let's talk among ourselves, gather input, and let's have a conversation at our July 16th or July whatever the date is meeting about where we should go. At that meeting, I'd invite Marcel to present her concept that addresses the issue you've been talking about, the cost of the lake right now.
July 11th.
And perhaps we could ask Tom and Jeff to maybe collaborate on some kind of a rough outline of the kind of issues that need to be covered in that kind of a statement. And then I think, as is our typical process, I don't like to put people on a spot to make the short-term decision on a long-term issue. And I know some people are a little impatient with that, but let's have the conversation at the July 11 meeting. And everyone come prepared to share their issues, ideas, concerns. And then we'll go from there and decide what to do to make sure we can be as collaborative as possible and try to reach, as we've done in the past, consensus on issues. Is that a good approach? Jeff and Tom, you willing to work together?
Yeah.
All participate as well in that process? Marcel? Thank you. Marcel would have been at the table today had I been a little quicker to respond, so my fault, my apologies, Marcel. Okay, great. Good discussion. Next agenda item is public comment. We always include a public comment section on our meeting agenda, so if anyone wants to raise an issue, we've had a lot of public comment questions during the process, so maybe we're spent there. But let me just ask for a raise of hand, anyone who'd like to make a statement during our public comment period, so I know how to allocate time. Bless you. Other recommendations and actions. Our next meeting is July 11th. It appears as though we have a pretty good agenda already in terms of discussing policy statements and where to go and talking about the appropriation, the $125,000 we have to allocate. I was hoping at one of these meetings, when we did our water strategy and then we as a group prioritized those items, we found that legal issues were four of the top 10 were legal issues, and we have brought in Steve Clyde to talk to us and educate us a little bit. Three of the top 9 are conservation-related issues, and I've been interested in having a discussion about that and some education. Are you interested or willing to entertain that at either July or a future meeting? Anyone not okay with that approach? Because we've kind of marched through the categories that we've identified in our strategy. Okay, any other comments? Is this a good location for our next meeting? Laura, you checked, haven't you?
Yeah, they're tentatively booked the whole rest of the year.
Anyone object to coming back to beautiful Davis County?
Alt may have an objection.
I was just going to say, there's been a suggestion that we move to the bigger room downstairs today that might be easier for people.
I didn't know there was a bigger room.
There's the library, there's a bigger, the library has a half section, and so does the Davis County. We could put the portable tables together if we need to. So we have to see if it's available though. Because you guys have to reserve this.
Well, let's check. I personally like the crowded intimacy. I think it helps foster brother and sisterhood. If you're too far from somebody, it's easier to yell at them.
I'll go check out the venue after this.
All right, thank you, Laura. Appreciate it. Thank you. Yes, Laura. Any other comments? So our next meeting is at 10 o'clock on July 11th. I'll entertain a motion to adjourn 5 minutes early.
Thank you.
Is there any debate or discussion about adjourning? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed nay? Abstention? Todd, thank you for being here. And thank you all for being here. It's good session. We're adjourned.
I'm on holiday that week. I won't tell you what I'm wearing or drinking, but I'll be here.
What do you have to share? Where are you going?
Tahoe.
Oh,
nice.